We said that there's a source of a packet of data, a packet of decoding. It goes through one or more internet service providers, eventually enters this cloud here, and we haven't said much about what happens inside the cloud, except somehow, like a pinball, it bounces out the other side towards its destination, it goes through multiple internet service providers here, and ultimately gets there. Now, why is this useful? It might be useful because it can help us analyze as lawyers, again, maybe lawyers working for the captains of industry or lawyers working for somebody else or constitutionalists, how to think about a given phenomenon that is alleged to be a bunch of rampant copyright infringement. And thus, if we examine the Napster case, and here, hopefully, is my overlay on this diagram of the RIAA and Metallica versus Napster case. And what we have here is somebody up there, the source, has Metallica tunes they want to share. That little red dot inside means they have downloaded certain client software from Napster, so their computer isn't just a computer running a browser, it's also running Napster in some meaningful way. And through these ISPs into the cloud, they find Napster.com somewhere in there. And what is Napster.com but a big directory, a big yenta, if you will, a matchmaker hooking together different people that have things they want to share. It's a market maker in music, so that you always end up consulting with the big red dot in the middle, Napster.com, to figure out who may be offering some particular track of music that you want. Napster is the one that alerts you that there's a destination out here that might have what you want, or if there's a destination, there's a source that has what you want. And then to actually transfer the file, you don't need the big red dot. The big red dot is just hooking the two of you together. The actual file, I don't know if I've represented this well enough since I have no dotted line, I just saw four dotted lines back. But the actual file doesn't need to go through Napster in order to get from the source to the target. And of course, all of these arrows are bidirectional. The idea with Napster and Metallica is if you've got something to share, you can share it. In the meantime, if you want to derive something from somebody else can use it, you can grab it. Now, what this really highlights is there are more than one target if you are the RIAA or Metallica wanting to go after somebody. Some particular users, this in this diagram is you. You might be a target of Metallica's wrath or Napster, RIAA's wrath if you are copying music that you have no legal right to. Of course, again, that may be somewhat up in the air. But you are also not the most powerful target. You probably have student loans. You may well have had your identity cloaked in some fashion, and it makes very bad press to go after non-Harvard law students. It's always a good press to go after non-Harvard law students. Laser pointer. Do not look directly at this pointer. So it may be bad press, maybe good press actually, to go after Harvard law students, but there are other students out there that are far more sympathetic, for which the RIAA probably for other reasons would not want to chase. So if not then you, here are some other potential targets that may be more palatable. Napster in the middle. They are the matchmaker making this thing happen, so maybe there's some case you can make for contributory infringement. And that's a case that many of you explored as you were trying to figure out how to relate it to Nutella or the rotisserie question for today. And then also the ISP, and the example we talked about, Harvard itself might be a good target. If Harvard is in a position to know a whole bunch of stuff going over its network is copyrighted and has a way to stop that material from getting copied, perhaps they could become liable for contributory infringement of some kind as well. Now, if you want to just take a look, so again, some of you analyzed Nutella and tried to see how it was different. Of course, the biggest difference with Nutella is actually in this diagram. I promised no more dotted lines, but here are a couple more. And with this, there is no big red dot in the middle. Nutella gets rid of the yenta. So instead, you download Nutella once from the Nutella website or some mirror of it. That's the software that then infects your machine and has other people using Nutella. And then thanks to that software, all you need to do is identify one other machine out there, and you can query what files it has, and it in turn might know of another machine that in turn knows of another machine. And before you know it, this guy can talk to this guy, because it's just following the dotted lines, and computers have a much easier time following the dotted lines than anybody else does. So this then eliminates some aspect of that middle target, doctrinally speaking. You can still maybe try to sue Nutella for producing the software and try to get it to stop. But Once the software is out there, one might argue it's a little harder to stop the phenomenon from taking place, and if there was that directory in the middle, if the directory were to crash, you could no longer hook up people wanting to share music. And many of you reflected this very chart in your answers on the 12 questions, even though none of you provided it exactly this way as an attachment to your answer. Okay. So I just wanted to review quickly. In future days, I might actually be able to steal snippets, if that's not infringement of some kind, of your very answers to accessory. I just want to provide you a quick summary, even as some of the answers I've rotated around. On the Nutella question, there was a definite split within the class as to the ease of use of Nutella. Some of you said that it was as easy as anything to get on. Within 30 seconds, you have the program. It's another minute, you're listening to Metallica. Others of you said that you spent an hour on it, couldn't get it working, and all in the meantime were using Napster in the background while you touched several albums worth of stuff. Most of you thought that the case would be hard against Nutella, because there's no there. There's nothing in the middle that you can go after. There's just this production of software. And some of you suggested that I didn't go after users, but then in the same breath said that there are fans. Who wants to sue their fans? The answer often is we do, but some of you seem to have been some hesitation for it and a lack of respect for your project piling up for hours. So that was some of the reactions on the Nutella question. On the Harvard Letter question, I came up with six kinds of answers. If you recall, the Harvard Letter question is, you are in receipt of Metallica's letter to Mr. Rubenstein saying, dear Mr. President, we are asking you to stop packets that are Napster-based packets from floating through your ISP on the way to and from the cloud. You might accept on faith that that is not an impossible task to do, and you have to come up with some kind of reply. So, one very common reply was, no way, we love academic freedom, we love Metallica, and we respect the privacy of our users, so go soak your head. That was the first reply. Another reply, which was far less frequent, surprisingly, given that your goal may not just be to expand, do so in a way that minimizes your legal exposure, is to highlight the fact that you cannot monitor the packets very easily. And if you can monitor the packets, yes, this is a Napster packet, how can you automatically know that that very fragment of a chord, that jangle or an instant that the packet represents, is somehow a copyrighted work? Maybe there is stuff on Napster we saw in the brief that actually isn't copyrighted. None of you have ever seen this in your personal experience. But we believe that out there, there's at least one file on Napster for which the original author of the file gave permission for it to be there. And there's no way for the university to know if that was that file at any given instant. And certainly it might be, again, as a legal maneuver to the advantage of the university to emphasize that it has no idea what's going on in this network, at least to the extent that it can do so without lying. It won't be perjury, since after all, it's not sworn to them. So it might even have opportunities to lie without actually coming back to confidence. Okay, number three, some challenge to notice of actual infringement. I guess that feeds into the cannot monitor point. One is a technical point about being able to know what a packet is and where it came from. The second to notice, though, is maybe it is fair use. Is there some argument that can be made, depending on the purpose for which somebody is downloading the Metallica tune or some other tune, maybe even if we can identify it as a work covered by the plaintiff's copyright, is still okay to be bouncing it around. Response number four is, gee, you're right. A number of you actually said, you know, you're right, this is immoral, this is terrible. Thanks for letting us know. We will now be shutting off Napster on our campus. I don't know if anyone wants to raise your hand and say you said that, but some of you actually did say that. A footnote to that was, gee, you're right, we will shut down Napster if you're willing to countersign this letter indicating a complete indemnification of us for any copyright infringement that has or will ever take place. That was good lawyering. Never give something away if you can't barter away for something. And you can say all you want about how moral we need to do it, but sure, why not extract from them at least a promise that they won't sue you anyway? What if, in fact, you say we'll shut it down, but then some geek in the computer science department finds a way around it, and then they come back and say, you said you would shut it down, you didn't, and you say yes, but something that your science department outsmarted us, and then you get the resumes of all the computer science professors, and you're told what they outsmarted these guys. So anyway, you can imagine, it'll make a really awful thing. Kudos to the person about that. And finally, there was the punting maneuver, classic lawyer's dodge, which is to say, thank you so much for your letter, we'll take it under advisement, and as eagerly as you, wait for the Ninth Circuit to rule and see what happens. So it sort of keeps the options open, says that we're in receipt of your letter, but doesn't promise specifically to do anything. You may as well find a word macro at some point, very helpful. So you can provide that answer on any number of things. What's my bottom line, having actually plowed through pretty much every response given to those questions this morning? My bottom line is people don't seem to be shedding a whole lot of tears over the publishing industries. People are identifying, surprisingly, more with those who wish to download tunes for free and believe that whatever the structure of the law may be, we're not saying what it is, the publishing companies are quite rich and can't really get over it, and why don't they just restructure their businesses to take account of the fact that everything can be copied freely. That seems to be sort of the underlying push, and indeed it's probably the cultural push that the RIAA is having the biggest problem. You say, what's the RIAA's biggest problem today? That's it, that even a room full of Harvard Law students can't get themselves litigiously excited about the bathroom of the RIAA. And of course, we haven't added the mercenary dimension to it yet, but still, I see that as an actual problem for the RIAA. Okay, so before we move on to go beyond copyright, does anybody have questions or comments? Feel free, I even have an Oprah-style microphone that I will hoist upon you. That's it, which also works in a way that this doesn't. You say it? I see. So it actually works. Questions, comments on anything so far? Going once. It's eBay. Going twice. Okay. We then will strap ourselves into our seats as we prepare, and 90-degree heat in this room, to move beyond copyright. So what is it moving beyond copyright? Why do we need to move beyond copyright? Well, as we briefly examined in the prior class, we saw that facts aren't so readily covered by copyright law. It's the actual expression of something. If you just properly paraphrase it, or otherwise reconstitute the idea, but use a different form of expression, then you're not in as much trouble as you would be under some creative expression where you just rip out a poem, say, and repost it. There are some people in the world who bemoan that fact. They have certain facts they've gone to great trouble to gather and wish they would be covered by, if not copyright, something resembling it. Then we have another problem, which is, what if there actually isn't any copying taking place? You can imagine somebody making use of your stuff on the internet. Some of the cases we read for today are great demonstrations of that. They don't actually entail copying by the target of the lawsuit, but somehow the target is doing something you don't like. These are the so-called linking and framing cases, which we're going to examine closer today. So two of the reasons why some parties worry about this gap, if that's what you want to call it, in copyright coverage. There's this one of the Brown problem. You go to great effort in order to gather certain things and provide them for a fee, like phone book listings, to the public. And if somebody could just rip off those phone listings and then sell them for a fraction of what you're selling them, by the way, you're having to sell them for a lot because it took you a lot of effort to assemble them, then you could be up the creek. Somebody is rewriting off your hard work, your brow is sweating profusely, and then somebody just waltzes right over and takes your stuff. That was the central problem argued in the Feist copyright case over phone books, and the answer in Feist to the Supreme Court was, too bad, you have a sweaty brow, but you cannot assert copyright in things that are mere facts, like directory listings. But if you get creative about it, you get in yellow pages instead of white pages, and you start to really put energy, PhDs come up with ways to categorize stuff in the yellow pages, maybe that structure could be copyrighted, but the actual names and numbers can't. And what would it mean if they could, after all? What if your own phone number was owned by some particular company, and for you to even repeat it could potentially be an infringement of that right? And there's also the problem of loss of control. People put something out onto the net, it doesn't mean they permanently want to lose control of it. I don't know how much we can get ourselves again into a languid atmosphere sort of exercised over that problem, but I will do my best to kind of provoke that as today's session unfolds. I thought it would be useful to show Total News the way it used to be. This is a screen snapshot of Total News, recently taken in the summer of 1997, before the site changed. There is Total News, and you'll see here that there's a whole bunch of wasted screen in the middle, And then there are these buttons up and down the side. You go to totalnews.com. This is a company run by some guys in a garage in Arizona. And there are ads here. This is how Total News makes its money. People buy ads down here. And they're hoping that you'll make Total News your homepage, because it just so neatly gathers these buttons along the right for all the things you're likely to want. And then you click on something like CNN Interactive or MandoNet. All of you, of course, are desperate to look at MandoNet. And boom, MandoNet pops up in the middle here. And this is actually a view of MandoNet. It's not a copy of MandoNet, per se. It's a framing of MandoNet. So you're just looking at MandoNet, mando.com, through the window of Total News. Total News' ad stays down here. MandoNet's ad goes in here. If MandoNet were to create something, their ad would go here. And right in the middle, in this little space left, would go some nugget of information that you were so desperate to get, you were willing to circle your screen with all sorts of extraneous stuff in order to read it. Okay, this is framing. You may have seen this happen. This was the inspiration behind the Total News lawsuit. Now, is Jill Davidson here?
Yeah.
All right. Oh my God, you're hiding in the back. You're on panel today, right?
Yep.
Congratulations. Can somebody somehow, let's just do a barn raising here, get this microphone back to Jill. So suppose you're working for the Nando Times, and you realize that your business model is not so good, and you need a source of money, you need to make a splash. Maybe you want to sue TotalNews.com for somehow taking something that isn't rightfully yours. If you were to try to go about suing them for, oh, I don't know, misappropriation, what would you say? It's weird to see you talk and have your voice there.
I think if I was going to make a misappropriation argument, you say that Nando is not necessarily making money off just reporting the news and putting it on the internet for free, that what they're really charging for is the number of eyeballs that see the news story and the ads that they can run at the bottom. So if they're going to sue Total News for misappropriation, essentially, if you think of framing as... it's as if Total News is pasting over and blocking part of the view or part of the picture that Nando Times is presenting to the public as their product. So they have taken away, if advertisers are going to pay based off of the number of people who are going to see the page, this is depriving Nando of a lot of advertising revenue and falsely adding to Total News's revenue or eyeballs.
All right, you said it not like you really believe it, but you said, you looked at the text, you said, all right, they're taking something away from Nando. And they're getting something out of Nando, which is namely, people may be more willing to look at the Total News site because they can click on that button and view it through the Total News window. Do you actually believe the argument?
I believe it shouldn't be done. I'm not sure I believe the misappropriation, because I'm not sure that misappropriation...
Is this an evil in the world? Is the world a worse place because TotalNews.com exists?
I can certainly think of worse evils, but from Nando's point of view...
That's true. Puppies are killed every day. There's a bunch of problems in the world. Forget about the doctrine for a second. Tell me if the world is worse off. Is this a thievery that we're witnessing going on, however you want to doctrinally categorize it?
I think the argument that it is a... grand disaster is that if Nando doesn't get their advertising revenue, then they don't want to go and report the news because they can't make it, they can't do so profitably. If they don't want to do that, then the public isn't going to get information, and if the public isn't going to get information, that spells disaster for the entire world.
We are all injured to the extent that others can throw a wrench into the advertising-supported model of content generation and display on the global internet, which still remains the predominant way of getting information across. That's what you're saying. You believe it?
Sure.
It's as if you believe it. It's functionally equivalent to believing it.
Absolutely.
Okay. How many people agree with this sentiment? Yes. You have no name tag. So you are, and let's try to get the mic your way. I know it's not really. Okay, Chef. You're Cedar Pruitt, right? Okay, so you're Chef.
Doesn't it also, in addition to that, doesn't it also matter that it's completely changed the context? They created this new consortium, which then in that instance, right? So, I think that's that.
Well, it's true that they maybe made it appear as if these guys are in some kind of special news distribution agreement. Well, I suppose they could say, no, they're not. But you're saying they're repackaging the information in a way that Mando didn't intend.
They've changed the context completely, and
they've chosen
the
app.
And
Mando
has no
information.
Is it an
explanation?
Yes, the person to your right.
My name's Doug.
Doug, yes.
Well, just something that I find interesting is that, you know, they're not cutting out the Nanotimes ads. The ads are still there. And the content is still there, substantially in the same form that it would be if you were viewing it through another browser. And I'm inclined to look at what Total News has done as almost as if it's a surrogate browser. If we were using Opera or some kind of third-party browser, it seems to me that legally it would be within their right to put ads if they wanted to ad support themselves down at the bottom or put. You know, I know Microsoft puts up little buttons at the top that where that, you know, where you can access different Microsoft-related content.
Nice.
It seems to me this isn't much different from that. That Total News has become sort of a surrogate pseudo-browser through which, you know, it's a news browser. You can view news content from different sources, and yes, it's a little bit smaller, and it appears in a slightly different context. The buttons that had surrounding it are a little bit different, but it seems to me that they might be able to make the argument that they are basically performing the same function as a browser, and they're
it's
just
true. You can imagine Netscape deciding up here to run little ads while you watch, and unless you're visiting Netscape.com, they're famous and much visited NetCenter, you are not getting content from Netscape, but instead you're getting content from somebody else, and Netscape is benefiting from you somehow if you're buying a browser as you go from one site to the next. So you're right that if you can make this just seem like a browser, maybe somehow you don't want to make browsers illegal. That's a disaster, but that's a disaster no federal judge wants to contemplate. So somehow we have to let this slide. Is anybody else willing to stick up in favor of NandoNet against Total News? Erin?
Yeah, two things. One is, because you're right, because the ads there, it seems less like there's a...
Thank you. I always wanted to be on Oprah. It's really what it's... The harm to Nando is that it's bypassing their homepage, and it's bypassing the system by which they would have people navigate their system in a way that a browser would probably, it would happen less directly. So the harm to Nando is that they're bypassing the structure that Nando wants its users to go through, where there may be other ads on other pages that they want their users to go through. But my question, which may just betray my ignorance about copyright law, is why is that not a derivative work, since it takes not just the news story, but the actual layout and font and all of the other creative ingredients that go to copyrightable material. Why is that not, even though it's not copying, I guess it is from the point of view of from the perspective of the user.
So somebody want to help Erin out? Somebody maybe who's taking copyright? Is this a derivative work prepared in violation of the exclusive right to prepare derivative works reserved for copyright? Yes, three back.
Not too big, sorry, I don't have my name tag today. No, I have it at home, I'll bring it tomorrow. I'm not sure if this is right, this is just a stab in the dark, but I know that works have to be fixed in some tangible medium of expression in order to be a work, and I don't see how they're having the user link to Nando's site creates, they fix anything.
Yeah, Erickson is a little subtler than that, because it says, well, you're contributing, you're providing the ingredients by which to prepare a derivative work. You push the button, the crank turns, and out pops something fixed in a tangible medium. Here it is, right here on a screen, roughly tangible.
It downloads to your computer.
It downloads to your computer. The resulting screen snapshot can be taken and saved for years. So it's giving you somehow the spirograph with which you can roll the thing around and make a nice spiral design on top of somebody else's work. Yes, Emma.
About the what it seems to happen on CNN doesn't want to be associated with some guy who around the
CNN has high standards. When we think CNN, we think quality. And suddenly we look at this goofy total news site, and CNN says, they don't want it. Now, of course, CNN may be in tough shape because often at the end of their articles, they provide links to helpful sites if you want to learn more about it. Not framed. And indeed, the remedy that was asked for was not a remedy that says you can't even have the buttons. Although there was, if you saw in the trademark part of it, some complaint about that and the kitchen sink theory. But this is what they wanted to see happen. If you click on CNN, a separate window pops up. And then it's not integrated into the basic thing back here. It just pops up. You look at it. And that's what CNN does with its own links. When you click on a CNN site link to an external place, it creates a new window. And for a while, by the way, they entered into a settlement. Several news guys didn't particularly want to fight this out in court. So they ended up doing a new window for the plaintiffs, and Nando, which wasn't the plaintiff, still got framed the old-fashioned way. At this point, they seem to be doing a new window for everybody, which is why I had to invoke the new thing. So is there anybody willing to actually say, now we're using our ought hats, the state of the law ought to be such so that you can't frame the way the Total News was doing. Is anybody willing to go to bat with that proposition? Not a single person? You're not? Yes.
Yes, yeah, and in some states, grant you guys and artists moral rights so that they can control how their paintings are shown so that if you can't hang a painting upside down once an artist has an established reputation because you're harming his reputation as an artist and the value in that reputation. I think these CNN, Nando, and everyone can make the same argument that they, you know, I know they have to sort of display in the explore and escape window, but within that window, they get to control how it seems, they get to control the speed of the banner ad.
And how do you get around Doug's problem of you've just indicted the browser itself?
Well, if that's sort of one of the essential sort of constraints of the medium, you know, you can't have paintings, you know, that are, you can't have moving paintings, you know, you can't have websites that are accessible through a browser. It's one of the inherent restraints in the medium.
But you could say there are some browsers that are loyal to the way that the thing is meant to be displayed, and other browsers that are disloyal. Disloyal browsers ought not to be permitted.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's a reason that, you know, moral rights haven't been more widely accepted at a national level. And it may be that that's just something that the sort of that the market for browsers and an artist's moral rights or an institutional creator's moral rights will sort of have to work out.
All right, so that was a sort of...
Right, and I guess, I mean, yeah, it doesn't seem unreasonable that you should be able to control the, the presentation of your creative material, of your creative works.
It doesn't seem unreasonable that you should be able to control it.
Right.
If you put something up on the net, anybody who frames it and you object, you should be permitted to demand that it be taken down.
If it harms your reputation as a creator. Within the obvious limits of fair use, this hardly seems that it meets any of the factors of fair use. It's not critical. It's not, it's for a commercial purpose. They've taken the whole thing. And, you know, these are news sites, but in fact, there's something created to them.
Now, note that I think we are, as it seems, accurately in a very squishy territory here. using copyright. It's funny that fair use is still sort of floating around, but maybe useful as a concept. It's not statutory scheme of 106 and 107 as Title 17. This is common law misappropriation. This is simply trying to get a state court to say, under your tort law, it can be harmful to take A from B, and you should define this particular activity as taking something from somebody else. Misappropriation is probably best understood as a legal treaty of unfair competition. In some way, they are unfairly competing with me because people are going to go to their site instead of mine for something that I did, and that is just unfair. And you should find, then, judge, that that is a misappropriation. And browsers aren't doing something unfair because we'll come up with some way to distinguish them. But something like Total News, we should worry about. I don't know how much you'd say. If you, Ben, maybe you can jump to AskJeeves.com. How many of you have used AskJeeves.com? Keep your hand up if you receive a satisfactory answer from AskJeeves.com. And yet, you keep going back. Okay, so there's AskJeeves. We can ask it a question. Do you know the answer? That's a very long question. How about, what is the tort of misappropriation? It's probably unfair since Jeeves isn't exactly a lawyer. What does the financial term tort mean? So let's ask what a tort is. All right, ask the question. Notice that there is an ad here provided by Jeeves. And where is it going? We don't know, but the world is turning. It's going somewhere. Ameritrade, notice that it's hearing the ad because we asked about a financial term. Jeeves is making its dime. And we stare at the ad while Jeeves gets that information. Little word on internet business models here. And ultimately, come on, where is it? How about what should I consider before pursuing a civil lawsuit? That was the second question. Want to jump back and ask that question? There we are. What should I consider before pursuing a civil lawsuit? So this is the Court TV Law Center. Okay. So scroll down. And notice that this answer from the Court TV Law Center is framed by Jeeves. And there's actually no easy way to even know where this page is on the net. Although if you, Ben, of course, you can find a complicated way to know where it is on the net. There it is, it's at CourtTV.com, but if only you knew that, cancel that out. All right, click on one of these. You know, if you want to go home. Look at that, Jeeves is there with you. So now Jeeves has framed Court TV. So what do you say?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not sure that what the Ask Jeeves service would lose. If they had to create a separate frame, I know that then they would have competing banner ads. But
you said it wouldn't be so bad to ask Jeeves
to create a separate window, right? Yeah, then you can always go back to Ask Jeeves to ask your follow-up questions, or you can sort of pursue Court TV's advice. I don't know. I assume Court TV has not licensed this. Maybe they have.
Court TV appears willing to license pretty much anything, but I don't know. The answers are all over the net, and Jeeves happily
does. Right. As far as a service goes, Ask Jeeves could still answer all of your questions, even if it did so by creating separate windows, and then Court TV would get it sort of moral rights in this creative website and its banner ads.
And what about the sweat of the brow problem?
I don't have anything smart to say about that.
Yeah, Michael.
Well, I think one thing, maybe these websites are being short-sighted and not realizing that there's the potential that actually uses the right service to enhance both of their revenues. But beyond that, I think that the market will determine whose services. I mean, they're not removing any part of the content. You're still allowing, you still see their little fake warning box up there, which lets you know you need to get high speed internet access. I think that's what it says.
Right here, yeah.
Yeah, and which is a sly ad that I called before when I was first starting. And
you don't need to know before filing a civil lawsuit.
What's that?
I think that the people kind of determine whether or not Attributes is providing a service that they're willing to put up with by the fact that that ad blocks out too much of the core TV website. Like, kind of like I thought the total news would cover that way too much. They are at least too much space, then you won't go there. And you that sort of determining whether or not that service is valuable enough.
You won't go to Jeeves to begin with if Jeeves is overly intense.
Yeah, if Jeeves is half a screen of ads and they always load first, I'm not going to go there.
Now, Ben, are all the links within this thing, are they Jeeves? No, they're just for TV. So Jeeves isn't necessarily following what you're doing as you click on stuff, right? Jeeves has no idea what you're doing unless you jump back into Ask Jeeves. All right, so at least Michael says there's going to be some market limit on the ways in which somebody like a Total News can rip off your stuff. Because if they're too intrusive and they squeeze too much on, you're just going to go to the original source. You're not going to worry about the middleman. And that's not a problem. Yeah?
Maybe I'm the wrong
side of
this, but I know that when I'm looking at
Google
Ads, there's nothing there. So now I know about PortTV.com. And you know,
the
more I see
that
I get
potential
of another customer.
So
Core TV
should be happy.
They should be happy. They're getting good
advertising. Now, this is one of the conundrums raised when you have these internet businesses in conflict. In fact, if you go to my next slide, we have some demonstration of what was the Ticketmaster versus Microsoft case, right? Here was Sidewalk.com, originally started by Microsoft, one of many of their ill-fated net ventures, and you know, you can browse and learn about events happening in Seattle, get restaurant reviews and stuff like that. So you find out that the Indigo Girls are playing the Paramount Theater. They have heard of the Indigo Girls, kind of late 80s, early 90s band. Okay, so there they are. It's Wednesday, January 98, and if you want to buy your ticket, just click here. And if you click there, you would go to the Ticketmaster site into what is known as a deep link. What is a deep link? A deep link is when you actually start at Ticketmaster's top, wend your way down to want to buy a ticket for this event, grab the URL that you see up here, the location that you are when you do it, and then paste that into what will become that link as Sidewalk, and that way people don't have to find their way through Ticketmaster, thereby subjecting themselves to hundreds of ads before they can buy the ticket. They can go straight there and buy the ticket and only get a few ads as they do it. So we had then a meeting. There was a conference room with Redmond and Ticketmaster and Microsoft sit down at it. And what do we have? On one side, Microsoft says, you should be so pleased. People use our Sidewalk site. They don't even know about you. Then they click on the link and they're directed your way. We're giving you business. How much do you want to give us as a commission of tickets that you sell as a result of people finding your site through our link? To which the Ticketmaster people responded, no, you don't understand. People only bother to go to this stupid page because they know that they can buy the tickets on it. That page is worth a lot less without the ability to buy tickets. So what commission do you want to pay us as a result of allowing people to buy tickets on your page? So that was sort of a conundrum. And they couldn't quite come to an agreement on licensing, so it started a lawsuit. And thus you saw a lawsuit quite similar to that one, the actual injunction written by the judge, which has some wonderful text in it. I referred to a very wise opinion by one of the other texts that we read today. I love to give you the line that says, the computer is a piece of tangible personal property. It is operated by a series of electronic impulses. It not appears to be trespass to channels with development. The principle should not be too different. That's sort of, you know, multi-man not fearing these mysterious electronic impulses that are generating the Indigo Girls of development. So we end up with a lawsuit over this. And it's a lawsuit that happens after first, there's also a technical response. There was a time, and if you clicked on that link to buy your ticket, this is what you would see. It says, this is an unauthorized link and a dead end for Sidewalk. Cannot connect to Ticketmaster Online directly to Microsoft Sidewalk. We welcome you to visit Ticketmaster Online directly by pointing your browser to Ticketmaster.com. They had a way of knowing where the referrals were coming from and would simply block them. But then Microsoft got cracked. This is the kind of thing that gets eats out of bed early in the morning. Like, all right, we need to get around this. And they go back and forth. This is exactly the story that was told in the eBay versus Bidder's Edge case. eBay is the auction site where you can pretty much get anything you want by typing in the search box. Somebody in Iowa is selling it, and then you can arrange the deal. eBay brings you together with that. Bidder's Edge says, come to us first, and we'll be like Total News. You give us the search term, and we'll search a bunch of these auction sites simultaneously and help you find the best deal under one window. And you have eBay come back, because we don't want you to do that. We want people to have to come to eBay in order to get to us, and they start blocking search robots coming from Bidder's Edge, and eventually Bidder's Edge comes up with proxy servers. They sort of start rotating their shield frequency, and as a result, the laser doesn't get through. There's all sorts of wonderful Star Trek metaphors that can explain what's going on, and eventually it lands in court. So this is alleged to be yet another form, then, of misappropriation or some stealing of value working off the hard labor of another. Now, let's just ask one of our panelists. Who else is on the panel today? How about Elizabeth E? Great, Elizabeth E.
Yeah.
There you are. Hi.
Hi.
So, do you think that Ticketmaster has a better case than, say, Nando or CNN? Is Ticketmaster in good shape? Should they be able to prohibit deep linking? And if so, what's their best theory? You're looking at me as if I have not explained something.
No, I'm not on panel, so
you're not on panel. Oh, well, you did the reading.
My gut is yes, they have a stronger case because it's close facts too. So either way, you can't copyright facts. And I just pretty much put the same thing. If they can find a way to get into the textbook, if they can get through a deep link, they should be able to.
So Ticketmaster shouldn't have anything to say about it.
I mean, you can complain about it, you can try to block it, you can try to get an agreement, but
we should just leave it to a technical war. A sort of deadweight loss as money is poured in on both sides on wars between nerds to see whether or not deep linking should be permitted.
I have not thought about the issue yet.
You're just not bothered?
No. No, I think they
you also pick a Napster user?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, sure. Hello? Okay. My thought is the trespass argument was a fairly good one that the Ticketmaster made, in the sense that tickets is taking up their computer bandwidth. They're taking up their ability for other users to access their site, for their computers to do what they want. And I understand the argument was made in the case that, you know, it was a very small trespass, but as far as I understand the trespass theory, you know, if you put a foot on my property, you're nevertheless liable for the trespass. And so in that regard...
And where's the foot here?
Well, it's in the... It's in the use... Well, it's in the use of... I don't remember whether the tickets they're actually searching. I think they are. They're searching the Ticketmaster site as well to find out all these facts. And so they're actually using like Ticketmaster's servers or wherever their page is located. It needs to work in order to give tickets.com its information to send it that.
Well, anytime you request a web page from somebody, some measure of the Drupal wheel has to turn to give something back to the person requesting it. Of course, how about just not deep linking, but you know, shallow linking? Tickets.com just says, by the way, here's a link to Ticketmaster.com, the top of the site. And Ticketmaster.com says, I don't even want you to do that. You're trespassing on a server because you are causing impulses to hit us to serve up on our homepage.
Well, it seems like Ticketmaster had an agreement that supposedly would prevent that, although if you deep link, you don't see that agreement ever.
Okay, now this is different from trespass. One thing is trespass, and the other is a contract theory. It says when you start exploring a website, maybe there are certain terms and conditions that you agree to by certain clicks you make. And as you agree to them, then you are bound by it. One of the things that binds you might be, you must be a human to use this site. That appears to be one of the terms of agreement of obtaining a license to use eBay. You have to be human to use eBay.
If I may go back to the trespass idea, but
sure. This is one of your shows. I don't know why that didn't look like a fruitful path.
Isn't part of it that you could theoretically say we don't want you ever linking to any part of our site. I mean, it's part of your bundle, the rights of owning something. You can say that person, nah, don't want them. And in that regard, they could prevent you, or at least legally prevent you from accessing even the top level, the homepage.
Well, that's the question.
Legally speaking. I mean, isn't that what trespass is? You got something, you can keep somebody off of it.
Trespass is when somebody comes with a big club and bangs down your door and says hi, and you say get out, and they don't. I mean, we know that's trespass. But whether or not somebody that puts up a public website then starts objecting to some of the visits that comes in, you can say, well, that's trespass. The best we can tell from the doctrine is that what most gets the judge on your side is, one, an attempt to work it out reasonably. That's what made eBay work so. And second, some argument that the nature of their use is different from the customary and expected use of just the throngs of people. This is the humans distinction. That somehow allowing these robots in, contrary to convention, and that's where you get into this robots.txt file. If you actually pull up off of any favorite website, I don't know, you can go to our own surfer has it, there's eon.law/robots.txt. You're never supposed to see this, but somebody who is not human is supposed to see it and see that they are not welcome. If you are star, any user agent, please don't look in the archive directory. Thank you very much. You're now on notice. And I don't know, does CNN.com have a robots.txt document? I mean, there are lots of robots.txt documents out there. There's robots. Scram. This is where you can't look if you're a robot. And if you're Netscape, this is where you can't look. So you can actually, if you want some fun, start looking at the seamy undersides of all your favorite websites and see if your slurp, this is where we don't want you to go, if your scooter, if your ultra seat, these are the trade names of various robots that spend most of their time crawling the web. What doesn't Harvard want to look? Harvard doesn't have a robots that takes time. That's very interesting. Now, of course, you might ask, who came up with the robots.txt convention? Like, where did that come from? And the answer was, it came delivered on a plate, I believe, to the World Wide Web Consortium, people that aren't connected in particular to any government. But they came up with this convention as a way of at least enabling reasonable people who want to respect each other's requests from knowing what sort of intrusions are favored and disfavored on the site. Yeah.
I want to go back. I can frame it as a trespass question because there is this.
What's the interframing?
A question about that? I can frame it as starting with trespass, right? That has proximately resulted in damage to the planet. And I want to go back and ask a question about if this is an evil or not, the beginning of class, because. I'm not sure if we're going to frame it doctrinally as trespass or a broader economic argument, but I have this intuition that there's something extremely wasteful, you know, about letting this sort of framing or other things we've been discussing go unregulated, right? And I'm not sure if I'd like have a per se rule. I'm actually quite confused because beneath making an argument for wastefulness in these sorts of sites like Total News, there's the idea of the sweat of the brow for these very large corporate entities like news services, you know, Dow Jones, all these places. So I'm a little bit torn, but I guess I have an intuition that I would put the onus back on you then to tell us, you know, in your opinion, where this should stop. I mean, because in eBay, the rule about, you know, like having no limit to the number of people that can sort of freeload off of the auction site would result in irreparable damage.
Well,
so
it's about robots.
What?
It was robots that were freeloading that were worth about, right? As many people was fine, it's just robots they don't want to freeload.
Right. Okay, so it just seems like the more sites we have like this, if it's an advertising-driven model, right? Advertisers want the people that are most likely to have their sites. Their ads not crunched down as much, or the first ones you see, right? And so the the startups that become the most meta are the ones that get the best ads. And so, I mean, how do you respond to that? Where do you think the regulation should begin?
Well, let's ask our panel, or I can sort of give a deus ex machina. Who's on our panel who wants to take a crack at that question? Who's on our panel? Yes, Damien.
I think it depends on the individual circumstance. When you go back to the principal argument,
the principal argument there was that that eBay was being deprived of valuable bandwidth. Now, for instance, if you have an auction aggregated site such as eB that went around and aggregated all of this information from eBay and other like sites, it may very well be that when you have all these robots and other crawlers looking through their sites, there are people like me that are trying to search to buy a new notebook, for instance, and I'm sitting there waiting, and then 5 seconds later the auction that I want to bid at has actually ended because I couldn't get onto that site and I wanted to get onto it because someone else's robot was crawling that site and therefore I've been denied. So I guess my point being is that that's one example of eBay being able to put forward, I think, a very forceful argument for why it can say we don't.
But in that instance then, let's just be clear, whether we call it trespass or misappropriation, the harm comes from hurting the ability of the servers to serve, some actual mechanical effect on the site, not on any property interest asserted in the information collected. If those robots could be subtle, it would be okay, at least on this one reason, to support you there.
But I think the argument goes one step further than that simply because the trespass is the occupation of some part of that server. The robot can't work any other way than using up, as I understand, I've got someone that knows a great deal about technologies, but as I understand it, a robot wouldn't be able to work other than to actually occupy some bandwidth, occupying some sort of proprietary interest that eBay actually has. So the very fact that it's occupying something that eBay owns, being the server.
But that doesn't sound like a totality of the circumstances test. And that sounds like a per se rule. The minute that robot goes in, because it is occupying, no matter how minimis, some processor cycle of the target has the right to say, get out.
Well, that may very well be a consequence of the eBay decision.
Yeah.
Is there
somebody over here? No? Samo,
anybody else? Oh, yes, go ahead. I'm not a panelist.
That's okay. So here's my panel. It's apparently incredibly different
than
people I thought
were. Yes. No. When I was reading the case, it seemed to me that even though the trespass argument is the one to be made and the one that the courts seem to latch on to, that's not really what's behind the emotion that's driving the suits, basically, that it's really much more about some kind of property interest that we just don't have a legal definition for at this point, other than perhaps the INS decision,
right.
The hot news type concept, and that maybe as this case law develops, there will be some kind of property interest that's identified and named, and that's what we will start talking about instead of using trespass.
And do you figure there ought to be such an interest? I mean, the way to test it would be just to kick out the leg that is you're burdening our server leg. To exactly ignore for a moment Damien's point and say, well, suppose the robots could leave everything pretty much as it was found. You would never know they were there. You know, I want a rule that says I can chew gum in class so long as you don't notice. And if you don't notice the gum, then I'm allowed to chew. But I get the result of the gum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My instinct at this point is to think that there should be some kind of property interest there, and it is coming out of the fact that we do have a new technology that's making it so much easier to do this kind of misappropriation. That, you know, in whenever the INS case was decided in the 1920s or something like that, you had to go and bribe people to get the information that you needed, and now you can just send out electronic robots and kind of capture facts and bring it back to your server. And that we probably have to shift our thinking on it.
Somebody's got to figure out what the parameters are. Maybe the NBA sports pager case is one in which the NBA should be able to say, our people are sweating their brows to generate those scores. You have no right to take them from us and send them onto pagers, at least as options. You can report them, but nobody cares. But
I'm not sure what the parameters should be, but there does seem to be some kind of basic fairness argument there.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe fleshing out this property notion a little bit, maybe you could define the harm to the property just in terms of the harm to the market share, whatever it is that
these websites are offering. So, for example, with eBay, you know, they're offering the service of providing a forum for people to, you know, auction their goods. What they fear most about is that these robots are gonna allow other competitors to take that share of that market away from them. Similarly here, I assume that there are other venues for purchasing tickets online than Ticketmaster.
So it's true. So you're right. eBay is probably worried about competition. As the biggest auction site, if you had to laboriously go to multiple ones, and you only have time for one search, you'll go to eBay. On the other hand, Bidder's Edge can do its magic. You'll go there, and suddenly the fact that eBay has the most stuff up doesn't matter because you search that along with everything else. Now, is that when you say we should weigh the commercial impact on the market, what should the court do with that fact? Does it want to encourage these markets, or does it want to discourage them?
Well, I think it does, because, I mean, otherwise, I mean, what has eBay created? It seems like what they've created is, you know, well, when I want to auction, I'm going to go to eBay. That's what they've worked so hard to create. So, I mean, if we want to incentivize the creation of these kinds of forums, or incentivize the, you know, service of offering tickets online, which I think we all do, it seems like we would want to protect that.
Well, this is an early example. This was an experiment by Arthur Anderson Consulting. Apparently some consultants had spare time on their hands of their returns, and they created the bargain finder agent. There he is. And it would search 10 stores for an album. So I punched in Yellow Submarine, and it would go ahead, and it couldn't find it at these three stores. And then it's for $8.99 at CD Bargains. It's also for $12.99 at CD Bargains. And it's for $13.40 at CD Music. Couldn't find it at eMusic. CD Now is blocking out our agents. You might want to try browsing it yourself. NetMarket is blocking out our agents. You might want to try browsing it yourself. And CD Rams out of service. So, okay, there's Bargain Finder, which basically morphed into what we now know as buysimon.com. And Simon actually bears a possibly trademark infringing resemblance to the Bargain Finder agent in New York. You might jump to buysimon. And you actually say a site like buysimon, under this market analysis, should lose in any instance in which one of the sub-sites that they search doesn't want their robot visiting. Because here you can just punch in something bad. Something you want to buy, a ThinkPad that is assembling its Christmas wish list now. And so he's going to click on something that's not working, but narrow it to handhelds. And then here's a bunch of them. Buy.com, Hardware Street, and there are the different prices. So now you say the world is worse off because of the existence of this service.
Well, it's worse off if it gets to the point where everybody's competing with each other, to the point where nobody decides that it's worth entering the, you know, online PDA market to sell PDA.
Because you can't rip people off anymore.
Because you can't sustain a profit margin that allows you to stay in business and, you know, attract finance and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
What does it say? I mean, I think are counteracting market losses when you ban services like this. And, you know, one being the value to the consumer, but furthermore, you know, if people are forced to be more competitive, I would think that would lead to more efficiency. They'll have to find
new ways. They went to a lot of trouble to create something that was not competitive.
I'm sorry?
They went to a lot of trouble to create a site that doesn't have easy competitors.
Yeah, but you have to look at how then that's hurting. I mean, is the harm to these businesses, which ultimately harm the consumer base, larger than the gain to the consumers in the aggregate? And I think, in addition, sites like this have added value, so they should derive some compensation. So they should be able to extract some of the value they create.
So, Iris, do you like the idea of a market analysis? It may turn out opposite from his market analysis, but a market analysis nonetheless that says, the kinds of linking and framing and robot searching that we will allow are ones that don't harm the incentives to create the material that's being searched to begin with. All other kinds of so-called appropriation are okay.
I mean, no, I would prefer totality of the circumstances kind of thing.
Totality of the circumstances.
Well, overall, all the gains and losses to society, you know, based on that would follow.
In other words, the judge looks at everything and makes a decision.
Well, you do have to list out some factors, but I think that would be one key driver of the rules that we create.
Yeah. Somebody else way into that. Yeah.
Sure. I like to think of offline analogs whenever I'm dealing with these problems. And the way I see it is, contract plays a big role here, and the analog I would make is to high quality, high information type products, and I think that's really what's going on with eBay. And there's just, while bots in a sense do make our lives easier, there are also serious costs that they're imposing. And let's take an analog, let's say a Rolex watch. Now Rolex has authorized distributors for their products, and they refuse to sell to non-authorized distributors. They'll in fact go after people who try to sell a Rolex watch in a retail environment who doesn't meet certain standards. The reason they do that is they feel that the watch has to be supported by a certain level of training, a certain type of marketing environment. They shouldn't be sold on a corner in a stationary store. They should be sold.
I got an Omcom stop working.
They should be sold in a certain way. And what's going on with these types of sites is, yes, they create value for the consumer, but at the same time, they put a lot of the marketing and brand investments of other players at risk, really without permission and without any kind of compensation. They basically say, well, eBay, you built the market for online auctions, you created the site, you exchanged the information, we're just going to take that and now use that for other players. Now, our links may not be up to date, so players may come to eBay, may associate eBay with us and think that it's eBay's fault, that we keep having bad experiences. We may also have other merchants on the site who are terrible providers, and that also reflects your reputation. People may start to assume that somehow you are related to these players, or that you've allowed yourself to be associated with these players in the same way that a Rolex watch would be associated with, I don't know, whatever. But the point simply is that usually what will happen in these environments, I think eBay's done the same thing, is they offer a contract. They say, look, if you want access to our information, and information is just like anything else, it's a product in this environment, you have to agree to certain conditions, and those are simply that you're not allowed to reuse the information in certain ways that it reflects badly on us. I think those contracts should be fully enforceable.
Now notice, he just came up with another way, right, beyond copyright toolbox. So far, we've kind of skipped around in trespass. We've skipped around in misappropriation as a subcategory of unfair competition. And now he's brought up another tool in the toolbox, contract. If there's some way you can get people bound to say they're going to do X, Y, or Z with respect to something, then we should enforce those contracts and away we go. Now, we saw in the Elkin Koren article some hesitation about that, because speech isn't like just any other commodity, she says. But there is real open question about that. One would wonder if you opened up the shrink wrap of a recipe book and it said, by the way, for the model of the book you bought, you agree not to actually prepare any of the food in this book. To buy the version of the book that allows you to prepare the food, you have to pay a little bit more. Now, would a court enforce a case against somebody who dared to make the recipe cheaper book? She says, no, of course not. That's not one of the license rights that they have to give away. On the other hand, if a fully informed bilateral contract, maybe you can pull it off. What is least subject to copyright? Perhaps the very law itself. Imagine if somebody could copyright section 106 of the Copyright Act so that I couldn't tell you about it without having to make an argument about section 107, fair use, which I can't tell you about because it's subject to copyright. So there is actually a law on point that says you can't copyright the law of the United States. Even the United States can't copyright the law of the United States. On the other hand, when we use West for free, when others pay, it says you agree that any information you get from us, you will not redistribute except to educate people who are existing or potential users of Westlaw. You can imagine the whole factor totality of circumstances test to determine whether somebody gave the information to a potential user of Westlaw. But it does say certainly you're not allowed to resell it. If you were to print out a bunch of copies of the Copyright Act and try to sell it, West would say under contract, not under misappropriation, not under trespass, they have some right to take the stuff. Laura, is that a question? No? Somebody, I saw a hand somewhere in this facility. Yes, and you still don't have an intent, right? You're still mapping that settlement.
Maybe the best is one of our panel members. We actually have a case that we found. That was our case set for the dead. So I don't know if you're
going to talk about the case study. Sure, tell us about the case study. Sort of short script of the case study so far. Oh, here are the panel members. So, Monty, are you here? Tell us about the case study.
I got mine.
You got your name. Excellent.
Well,
no one can take that away from me.
Basically, Jurisson's doing is that it was subscriber to Lexus, like the Lexus CD.
Jurisline.com.
And it was a subscriber to the CD-ROM version of Lexus. And what it would do is, for a while, it would take the cases from the CD, take away all of the editorial content. I think all left were the attorney's names and the date. And basically just had the text of the decision and reposted it on its website. Well, Lexus didn't like this, Lexus took it to court. And the arguments that were made was that, well, basically what you just said, that through contract, Lexus said, you are infringing on the contract, on our contract with you, not to do what you're doing. Because you're getting advertising revenue from this, whatnot, you're making a profit from our product. And the case pretty much settled. So we don't know how the court would have ruled. But, and what Jurisline now does is goes back to the actual courts and tries to do exactly the same thing as doing for Lexus. And so our questions from that is, well, what should have or could have happened if they didn't sell?
I think a good book's history question.
I don't know if that was our intent, but.
Well, I'm mindful of the fact that coming out of last week, people found it hard to get all that excited about the so-called misappropriation going on. We're basically at the phase we're at right now, more or less, which is we can sort of come to grasp the arguments. We can make the case, and as to whether at the end of the day you think one should win or another, well, hard story, totality of circumstances, rule of reason, let's just let the judges sort it out, that's what we need to do. And I gather, maybe I should test this out with a pump. I gather that people aren't feeling all that strongly about creating strong extra copyright property rights, apart from what Damian was saying, which is the sort of trespass, you're ruining our server rights, but just property rights innately in information that otherwise isn't subject to copyright. So this is a sample, let me just see. In the Ticketmaster case of deep linking, how many people think Ticketmaster should win? Yeah, huh, please. All right, that's not so strong. And just to be sure, let's say in the hypothetical case of Nando Times versus Total News, how many think that Nando Times should win? Well, it's because I asked it in a more spirited way. Okay, so we have sort of halfway here. Now, I asked Becca and John to prepare an example of potential misappropriation that does not at all adhere in commercial deprivation or sweat of the brow problems, which under our evolving understanding of the law here would make it the least successful candidate for judicial intervention. And that was, suppose we have somebody's homepage up on the web. Can we just go to the homepage, Ben? So here's Emily's homepage. Emily, your computer today. All right, she's not here. Here's her homepage on Angelfire, which is a free hosting network. Scroll on down. Hi, everyone. I'm Emily Robart, 17 years old, and in Tuscaloosa. She's going to be a senior next year. All right, blah, 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 blah. Here's some of her favorite sites. Here she is linking other sites. All right. Now, what I didn't make up was the fact that there used to be a guy named Robert Toops. How many people know who Robert Toops is? Robert would probably be happy to know that because he created a phenomenon called Babes on the Web. And the actual Babes on the website, I think, has long since been interred, but not before having generated no less than about a dozen term papers and PhD theses on his site. Here's what's left of Toopsie.com. It's sort of just a general, all right, click on some stuff. But here's our best recapitulation of what Babes on the Web used to look like. Can you jump to that, Ben? Oh, Ben, you're clicking on stuff. And, oh, no.
He's not the best on the drawing.
The old i.am. So here is Babes on the Web. And what Toops did was he came up with the Toopsy rating scale. This is actually Batman's design, so I'm not making this up. Here he says, along with being a capitalist pig, I'm a proud male chauvinist pig. As such, I've gathered all worldwide websites of women I can find. Instead of rating them on quality of design, I rate them on a 4 Toopsy scale, according to their personal pictures. My racism is totally subjective. If this is offensive to you, go to the National Organization for Women and cry to them. Maybe they will organize a cyber protest against my page, or maybe we'll find something else to complain about, either way. Okay, so we have sort of the Toopsy rating scale, and here are some people who just had home pages out on the web. And this is actually Robert Toops here, and he gives some number of to various people. So now, suppose you are. Suppose you're Emily, and you discover this page on the web. What are you going to do about it? What? Now, first of all, how many people think this page should not exist? All right, so it's almost as much as Nando Man. If you're Emily, what's your case? Somebody make the case. Emily, use the full color. Come on, all right, let's get short on time. There's some bots searching the database. Adrian Hunter, are you here today? Ben. Yeah, this morning I called on too. Didn't you? You got people over there. Sharon got called on. Lauren got called on. I see I've been taken out of rotation. Has Andrew called on?
I have not.
Congratulations, Andrew. So, Emily comes into your office. Andrew, I understand you're a lawyer that charges reduced rates at bargainfinder.com. Help me out here. What can I do?
I would tell Emily that she doesn't have a case. I think she has about the same rights as someone who is defamed in like a National Enquirer and that sort of thing. I mean, she contributed her picture to the public realm.
Just to be sure, people who get defamed in the National Enquirer may have a cause of action. Right? Just ask Carol Burnett.
They may. I'm not sure what that law is, but I think it has to do with loss of income due to National Enquirer. So if she can claim that some boyfriend is not dating her because she only got a babe treat, as opposed to a babe or ramen that she made.
Now, do you actually believe that?
Yeah.
You actually believe that if somebody is less likely to date her as a result of this page, she has a contract.
If he was wealthy. If there was a financial loss.
Just keep on thinking.
And she has a grin.
This is the best writing as bargain finder. All right, so what you're telling Emily is she has to show some financial loss. If she can't demonstrate financial loss, she's out.
Perhaps. Or, a personal loss if she's now depressed.
Okay, of course she's depressed. And not just because she got 2 Toopsies or something. She put up a home page. It was for members of the public to come take a look. And now there's a picture bandied about. In fact, click here for the anti-babes. Let's say Toops makes an anti-babes page. And now, look, there's mustaches on them, and now they do them with dog ratings. Oh, are you saying Ankh is the dogs are cute or Ankh? All right. So, this isn't hypothetical. This dog is out on the web. She's got no recourse. No. All right. Anybody willing to make a case for her? Somebody who hasn't spoken yet. willing to speak up for now. Do I want my panel? No, I want anybody to answer. I want the full color to answer. Thanks. Erica, here's Erica.
I'm back here.
Have a seat, please.
I'm actually quite comfy now, so.
Okay.
Make a case?
Sure.
Well, I think that the case you make is the case that actually you started to make and then rejected is the fact that he is, you know, suffering emotional distress and possible financial loss, if that's the case, but at least the personal loss to her well-being just because she put something out on the internet doesn't mean that someone can find her. It changed the form of how she placed it and twist her photo around and basically defame her.
So what's the cause of action? Defamation?
It could be. What is she claiming?
Well, she's not claiming falsehood. Jump back to her page. There's nothing false here, is there? It's clearly an expression of opinion by this Tutsi guy. There's no false statement uttered about her. So it sounds to me like she's out for defamation.
Okay.
What else in our toolbox might work? Do you care how this page was built? Do you care if this picture is a copy of the picture on the page?
Sure.
All right, fine.
Because he
making
financial gain off of the page.
I don't know. Would it matter in the case that he had banner ads on the page or not?
I think if he was appropriating her picture and copying it for his own profit, then she would have a stronger case against him than if he was just drawing a picture on his website because he made a case.
And this would be a case for misappropriation. Yeah. Right.
I think there'd be, you know, the obvious copyright case if they just took the picture from, you know.
You could get it for copyright infringement. Right.
So you could get it. It still wouldn't be the Emily's homepage link issue, but at least you wouldn't have two Tutsis looking at her, which visually may be one of the bigger, offensive things initially on the page.
Now, of course, thanks to linking and framing, if Tutsi has a good enough web designer, he can make this page come about. Here's Ben taking a look at the actual page here. Here's the text of the page. And as it is right now, it looks like this could be Exhibit A in the copyright infringement lawsuit. There is her picture. Here it is, emily.jpg. This thing is actually on Tutsi's server, you see. From some close, we get an expert to say, use the laser pointer. Okay, Emily's, he copied the picture. But now, Ben, make it so that he doesn't copy the picture. Instead, he merely embeds a link to her picture. All right, now let's see the new page. So, Ben just got stymied. Presume that in the 5 minutes we have left in class, Ben figures out a way around it, or it's a different host, he can link directly to that JPEG, and thereby they can appear right in the screen without making the copy. Now it's just total news. It's just framing the thing. Now what do you have?
And I make a tort argument. It wouldn't necessarily be along the exact lines of misappropriation cases we've seen in a commercial context, but there's definitely some kind of expectation of a high school girl's website that at least you could convince a judge and a jury that, you know, hey, you're putting this on a page of the web page when it's clearly a high school student with one expectation of privacy, one expectation of who's going to see the page and who's going to have access to the page. I mean, I think that that's definitely something that, you know, a good lawyer could at least get before a judge some form of a privacy tort.
So maybe a privacy tort, maybe a privacy. Would you advise her to put contractual language on her home page that says, by the way, you must get my permission before linking to my picture that I include on the page?
Sure, absolutely. You know, that would be, I'm not sure how much good a contract would be after he's already taken it and appropriated it and made the link. I'm not sure that would solve these problems. could have been pushed to scale by implementing the contract.
Yes?
Could that be a form of harassment, like when someone calls you repetitively on the phone? I mean, just like you linking to her page, you make a contact with her, it's like dialing someone's number repetitively, you get a court order that they say,
I don't know, what do you think? Explore a bit. Can it be harassment?
I don't actually remember harassment, I don't know, just learn harassment. But, I mean, like, I know when someone goes, calls them on 20 times a dog,
right.
Put some, get the judge to order that the person stop.
Right. I mean, certain key elements of harassment are going to be interfering with your daily life. They're blocking your ability to use your phone because they keep calling. Another aspect of harassment may be making you feel fear of some kind. You're apprehensive, you think this person is threatening you in some way.
That would make you feel fear.
That would make you feel fear?
I mean, my picture was on TV's website.
Yeah.
Let's put it in the other way. She's put this website out in the public domain. It's there. She's inviting people to come and look at her. Yeah, and saying, yeah, I'm here, come look at me. Look at me, I'm pretty here.
She deserves it.
So it's the same time she's there. She has a daily picture. Like, it's there, free. Come and look at me. What's the difference?
Yeah.
It's there for you to look at. It's not free. It's not there to steal and lift off and alter and use it. Anyway, nobody's not going to be upset if Tucci wants to sit around and use his web browser to find her homepage. He's upset because he lifts off the image, which is either her copyright or the popular copyright, depending. She put it on his page. And he claimed her content. It's her artistic. That picture is her artistic. Her work, the popular artistic expression. First choice of yellow, that kind of whatever, third choice of artistic expression.
Yeah, but it's
think
instead of. I think the link argument is harder,
but the picture is, in my mind, plain straightforward content.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No matter how it gets linked on
the page. I think if it says, you know, live family, the family is only a boy, I think it's not necessarily copyright infringement. I think the photo itself is.
Yeah, Allison. Criticism is commentary. It's right in the four-factor test. The reason just what she doesn't like about it is that the commentary wasn't satisfying. Yeah. We're running very well on time. When I gave Becca the assignment to find this page, she went above and beyond the call of duty. Here she has some guys like the gun, but here for the Lolita page. Now, I want you to evaluate this like lawyers. There are pages like this out here. This isn't just, you know, hypothetical, right? So, evaluate this page. Here's the Tutsi reading scale. Here are kids. Then a rating with the number of little icons. And then links to their home page. Should the law have something to say about the existence of this page? Huh? So. All right. We barely beat out Nando, it seems. How many people think the law should not have anything to say about this page? All right, somebody want to comment? Yeah. Got a shout.
I think that there is one whole thing. And when you mix it, just a picture, making it the right to give the...
Derivative work.
Work. So I think it's fine. Right. She has the right to her. Her work will be represented as whole piece in the manner that she has chosen.
Right. Well, let me just make some closing comments for about 30 seconds, just to kind of put closure on the day. One lesson to draw from this may be that to the extent that law is getting made in this area, and there is lots of it, it's getting made in the commercial space. These are the people that are bothering to bring suits, to make arguments, and to utter where the boundaries should be drawn, whether it's construing how copyright should be applied and to what extent fair use comes into play, or when we find that something, even as fully elaborated a scheme as copyright, doesn't comply for whatever reason, then what other tools in the toolbox are available is again getting iterated through the battles within the commercial space, with one of the primary arguments being deprivation of work. Sweat of the brow, in some other way you are free riding off of my work and costing me profit and harming competition in some way. There's also some aspect that deals with loss of control. That's the artistic argument about visual works, you can't hang them upside down. That's some aspect of I've created something and I have some say over it. Again, traditionally under United States law, that has fared quite poorly. There's been very few exceptions to that idea. It's usually the commercial argument that gets made. Also realizing of these tools in the toolbox that are contract-based, report-based, this is state law we're talking about. The Total News case was brought in New York State. And I asked Bruce Keller, who's the lawyer who brought the case, why. He said New York State is the only state that has actually created any misappropriation law to speak of. So that's the state he went to. And of course, a decision in New York may well have ultimately ended up binding Total News to all of its web-based activities. That in some way leads us into tomorrow, where we're going to be looking at the problem of jurisdiction and studying fairly closely some ways in which it's been solved, both through traditional legal means and through sort of sui generis regimes, like the IPAN Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy. And hanging in the background are some special categories, categories that aren't commercial. Oops, I'm putting the wrong thing. Where you look at a page and say, God, I'm glad there's an internet, perhaps, but I'm quite sorry if someone uses this to put, and there ought to be a way, if you think there is an articulable threat, to stop it. And later this term, we're going to look at the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act and the way it might bear on the federal law on the site in question of the little kids. So with that, thank you, and we'll see you tomorrow.